and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Mishpatim. This week is also a good time to start thinking about attending the Executive Learning Seminar at Pardes this year. The seminar will be July 2nd through 6th, and the theme is Returning to Zion, New Faces, Old Issues. You can join other executives, professionals, and community leaders from around the world for 5 intensive days of studying and touring with the best educators Israel has to offer. There's a video that you can watch to get a taste of what the Executive Learning Seminar is all about. See www.pardes.org.il/executive for more information and to see the video. It is a great week, and I urge you to think about coming and studying at Pardes with our master teachers. This week, Mishpatim with Rabbi Dr. Daniel Roth. Rabbi Roth is a member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the director of the Pardes Center for Judaism and Conflict Resolution. And now, Rabbi Daniel Roth.
Thank you, Larry. In this week's Parsha, Parshat Mishpatim, we have a difficult pasuk, a difficult verse, but I think it is one of the most important verses that needs to be discussed and learned today, because it has so much to teach us about some of the most pressing issues facing the world right now. The verse is in the book of Shemot, chapter 23, verse 2, and it says, Lo tie achre rabim l'ra'ot, v'lo ta'ane al riv lintot achre rabim l'hatot. The rabbinic translation of this verse can be found in, for example, the Kaplan edition of the Chumash. Translates it as, do not follow the majority to do evil. Lo tie achre rabim l'ra'ot. Do not speak in a trial to pervert justice, and a case must be decided on the basis of the majority. Achrei rabim lahatot. So this verse, these words, achrei rabim lahatot, go according to the majority. Again, not necessarily the way most modern translations read it, which have it inclined after a multitude to pervert justice, which I'll come back and discuss a little bit more at the end. But they understand it as the basis for democracy, the basis for going according to the majority. And I'll bring a couple of examples of where it comes up in rabbinic literature. The first is in the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, chapter 1, Mishnah 6. It learns from this verse that we must not rule in cases of corporal punishment with a simple majority of one, like we do in monetary cases. Rather, we have to go according to majority of two, because achrei rabim lahatot, go according to a special majority. Another case comes up in the Tosefta, also cited in the Babylonian Talmud, Brachot 37a, where it tells a story of Rabban Gamliel, who was the Nasi, the prince, the president of the high court of the Sanhedrin, and the rabbis who had a disagreement over what blessing do we say after eating dates. Rabban Gamliel held that a full Birkat HaMazon should be recited, like the way we do after eating bread. However, the other rabbis, the majority of the rabbis, held that just an abridged version known as Bracha Achad Me'en Shalosh, or we call sometimes bracha achrona, should be said alamichya, okay, or alapirot, should be said on it, but not a full birkat mazon. So once while all these rabbis were traveling to Jericho, Rabban Gamliel turned to Rabbi Akiva and he said to him, why don't you lead us in the blessings after the meal of having dates? And Rabbi Akiva jumped in and said the abridged version against the opinion of Rabban Gamliel. Rabban then rebukes him and says, why do you stick your head in between the rabbis that disagree? Why are you, lama ta machnis roshcha ben hachamim? which seems to imply that Rabbi Gamliel had hoped that he would hold, that Rabbi Akiva would hold like him, since he was, after all, the president, the Nasi. However, Rabbi Akiva is quick to respond and says, you taught us, you, Rabbi Gamliel, limnadatanu, you taught us, achre rabim latot, that we go according to the majority. And the majority holds against you, Rabbi Gamliel, even though you are the Nasi, even though you're the president, majority of the rabbis say, you don't say the full Birkat HaMazon, only the abridged version. A third context that our verse is used by the rabbis to talk about going according to the majority, which I think is the most profound, and this is the one I focus on, can be found in the Jerusalem Talmud, the Yerushalmi Sanhedrin, chapter 4, halacha 2, that tells a story, which is really right now my favorite story of all rabbinic stories, of when Moses went up to Sinai. He said to Hashem, can you please give me a Torah Chatucha? Can you please give me a clear-cut Torah? And God responds to him and says, if I give you a clear-cut Torah, Torah Chatucha, lo aita l'regel amida, no foot will be able to stand up. The tradition will be too rigid. Rather, what you need to do is on every single halacha, on every single line of the Torah, you have to be able to understand the mem tet panim tameh, mem tet tamim, panim tahor. Understand the 49 reasons of how you could see a particular issue being pure or allowed. And at the same time, understanding the 49 rationales and reasons for why that same thing should be forbidden and impure. And then what are you going to do after you understand how to argue the 49 of how to see it in both ways? Achrei rabim lahatot. Our verse. Then you go according to the majority. If the majority of the leaders of that particular generation raise their hand in favor of the matter being pure, it's pure. And if the majority of them raise their hand and say it's impure, it's impure. But there is truth on both sides. But we ultimately have to come to a decision based upon the majority. So this law, this notion of arguing the 49-49 is a prerequisite. It's like what comes before they would ultimately have the democratic process of the Achrei Rabim Latot, of going according to the majority. I want to go a little bit deeper into this idea of the 49-49, which is one of the most important things for me in how I understand what does it mean for us to learn Torah and also how to engage in disagreement. And to cite the medieval scholar, the Ritva, Rabbi Yom Tov ben Avram Asavili from 13th century Spain, who explains using that story of Moses going up to Sinai and understanding the 49-49 as the explanation as to how the Talmud can say that both the opinions of Hillel and Shammai are the words of the living God. The famous story in the Babylonian Talmud, Eruvin 13b, where they argue back and forth, and eventually a bat kol, a heavenly voice, comes out and says, you're both right. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Both these and those are the words of the living God. And the Ritva says, that's true. They both can be right because the Torah was given in contradictory ways. It was given in both the possibility of a Hillel read and a Shammai read at the same time. There were actually hymns, there were piyutim written, that used to be sung in synagogues, that praised the notion that the Torah was given in contradiction, that it was given in 49 ways one way and 49 ways the other way. As a note, it's unclear exactly why 49. There's a lot of different usages of that number within rabbinic literature, but one that I think speaks most clearly tells a different story. This is in Babylonian Talmud, Nedarim 38a, where Moses says to God, can you please give me the full 50 levels of Bina, or the full truth of wisdom. And God says back to him, Moses, you can't handle the truth of the full 50. The most you as a human being can attain is going to be the Memtet, is going to be the 49, meaning no human can ever fully get to the absolute truth of 50, but only 49 on any particular issue. Now, the rabbis enacted procedures to ensure that the Beit Midrash, or more specifically, the Sanhedrin, the high court, would constantly engage in 49-49 through different ways. So I want to just share a few of the different procedures that used to be there to make sure that they would get to such a 49-49 understanding of a particular issue. The first is that only people who actually knew how to argue the 49-49 were allowed to have a seat on the Sanhedrin. Such an idea is also expressed in the Talmud, Sanhedrin 17a, where it says, Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of, said in Rav's name, none is to be given a seat in the Sanhedrin unless he is able to prove the cleanliness of a reptile from biblical text. Meaning taking something that is explicitly forbidden in the Bible. It's very clear. And then prove that that same reptile is actually pure. Meaning, we want people on our courts, in our leadership, that are not held to what is written in the formal textual law, but have the good judgment to be able to have to know what is the correct interpretation that's needed for that particular time, that particular generation. And that can only happen when people fully grasp the ambiguity of the tradition and the 49-49. A second case comes up regarding corporal cases. Again, dine nefashot, when the Sanhedrin would consider having to sentence, using the death sentence, the Mishnah and Sanhedrin for chapter 2, Mishnah number 2 states that they would begin the vote from the side, matchilim min hatzad, meaning from the youngest and least respected in the Sanhedrin, so they would not be intimidated from stating their opinion, because what is important is understanding the different sides and not showing honor in such cases to the elders. Now, in dine mamonot, in monetary, they would start from the greatest sage, because we just want to get to the simple truth on an issue. But when it really comes to the most difficult issues, always start from the side, because we want to be able to hear all opinions and judge them on the merit of the issue instead of being perhaps influenced through respect and fear. A third case of where procedures try to encourage such 49-49 type of discussions had to do with actually the seating arrangements of how the rabbis would sit, right? That the Mishnah and the Tosefta in Sanhedrin chapter 8, halacha, the first halacha states that the Sanhedrin was organized like a half a round granary, chetzi goren agula, so that the judge could see each other, so that each judge could see each other. Kadesh yuroim ze et ze. And the Nasi would sit in the middle and the elders on his right and on his left. Meaning that they would sit in a half a circle because the truth was in the middle of the circle. The 49-49 arguments that would take place, that was the truth. Not the judge, the chief Nasi, the chief Chacham, would sit there and tell everyone in the court what's true, but it was in the argumentation. It should, however, be noted, in a later version of that same text in the Yerushalmi Talmud, in the Talmud Yerushalmi, it changes language so slightly that the Nasi would sit in the middle in order that all will be able to see and hear him and hear his voice. Yiru oto v'yishmu et kolo. And that's a real important shift, because it means that the Nasi now, in their concept, would sit in the front, and everybody would have to hear him and see him, because the truth is with him. And that idea, actually, it's interesting, becomes sort of a dominant idea later on in Gaonic time period, the way the Gaonic Yeshiva would be structured after the Talmudic time period was they would no longer be sitting in half a circle. They would be sitting in straight rows. Okay. Still 70, like the Sanhedrin, but the head of the yeshiva, the Rosh Yeshiva, would sit in front because the truth is with him and everyone else would be sort of hearing directly from them. A fourth procedure that seems to relate to the importance of having an argument of the nature of 49:49 can be found in the Talmud Sanhedrin 17a, which brings a case of what happens when all members of the Sanhedrin rule that someone is guilty with no one arguing the side of his side in favor of his innocence. In such a case, Rav Kahana states this person is actually acquitted. Rabbi Dov Beresh Gottlieb, 18th century Poland, in his book, The Yad Ktana of Hilchot Deot, explains why in a case when everybody of the Sanhedrin thinks that someone is guilty, the person is allowed off the hook. He writes the following. It already is known that the matter of debate is very necessary for attaining the truth of the matter. For through debate of opposite sides using reasoning and in-depth study, through this the matter will come to light and will be revealed the truth and the truth clarified. However, without the debate arising around areas of doubt, comments, challenges from any wisdom of the world, the matter will not come to light and the truth clarified. Therefore, our rabbi said regarding matters of capital cases that if everyone finds the accused guilty, he is ruled as innocent. For when not even one person arises to oppose the matter with comments and challenging questions and investigation, it is already not possible that the matter will come out and the truth be clarified. For capital punishment is so severe, we are concerned that in such a case, perhaps everyone fell in the same mistaken conception, and therefore he is not killed. In other words, there's a real concern by Rav Gottlieb of groupthink. And if everyone is of the same opinion with no disagreement, they may all be of the wrong opinion, since they are living in a false reality of a 50-0 and not of a 49-49. The same idea you can find in secular philosophical visions of what is the essence of democracy. For example, John Stuart Mill, in his famous book on liberty in 1859, states that though the silenced opinion be an error, it may, and very commonly does, contain a portion of truth. And since the general or prevailing opinion on any subject is rarely or never the whole truth, it is only by the collision of adverse opinions that the remainder of the truth has any chance of being supplied. In other words, understanding the 49-49 was not only for Moses and the sages of the Sanhedrin to do, but according to the Midrash, even young children, in the times of King David and King Solomon, they say, were taught how to do this. Were taught how to study their text in the 49-49. That's in Leviticus Rabbah 26:2. I'm reminded of a story that what used to be, that was told, I'll tell in a moment where it was told, but it was told that once the great leaders of Europe, Bismarck and Disraeli, the leaders of what we would call Germany today and Great Britain, sat together at a diplomatic meeting, and Bismarck turned to Disraeli and he said to him, if I had it up to me, I would limit everybody in my parliament to having no more than 2 minutes to talk, because all they do is waste my time. I know exactly what I want to do and what the truth of the matter is. And Disraeli turns to him and says, that's interesting. If I had a parliament with no one arguing against my opinion, I would go out and pay people to take my opinions to pieces, lest I be heading in the wrong direction. And Bismarck, who had tremendous respect for Disraeli, turns and said, where did you get such a crazy idea that you want to have somebody arguing with you? And Disraeli says to him, it's an old family tradition. Meaning, this is what we've been doing as a Jewish way of thinking for generations. That story was told by Rabbi Baruch Epstein in his book, My Uncle the Natziv, talking about the significance of learning Chavruta in Volozhin, in the great yeshiva of the 19th century, saying, this is how we learn our text, and this is how we create our democracies. So being able to grasp the contradictory 49-49 at any particular subject is really, really hard, especially when it affects us personally. It requires several particular traits, such as being self-aware, having muda'ut atzmit of our own 49 reasons that bring us to our particular understanding of the truth. And we have to ask ourselves, what are the experiences and people that contributed to our interpretation of the truth as we see it? It also demands us to have a certain degree of humility, that our truth is at best a partial truth based upon only 49 and never able to attain a full 50. And once we have acquired that awareness of our bias and our 49, then we need to acknowledge the 49 experiences, stories, concerns, and values, and news that make up our opponent's understanding of truth. And in order to fully enter into this opposing position, we must be able to cultivate a genuine sense of kavod, a respect and empathy for our opponents. We need to also have a certain degree of curiosity to really want to understand what are the 49 reasons and experiences that bring them to their understanding of the truth. And this demands of us to really engage in deep listening and, again, learning from each other. Grasping this contradictory 49-49 of a difficult issue, though, enables us to engage in a process of what we call machloket l'shem shamayim, a disagreement for the sake of heaven, a constructive conflict. And this method is really practiced by the sages of the Mishnah and the Talmud, and is practiced every time we sit down in the Beit Midrash and the Pardes Beit Midrash, and we focus our learning, and we do our learning never alone, but in chavruta with a study partner, respectfully arguing over our difference of interpretation of the text and of life. There is, of course, another side to this, which is what happens when we find ourselves in a situation that we're quite convinced that we're in a 50-0 game, that we have the full truth, and that there's something really wrong with the other opinion. There is no way of other looking at it. And this brings us back to the first part of our pasuk, of our verse, where it says, do not follow the majority to do evil. Lo ti'achre rabim l'ra'ot. If everybody is doing something that's wrong, they voted in the wrong direction, and you know that they've gone in the wrong direction, you must continue to oppose it, because you know that the truth is on your side, and that there is evil, perhaps, even on the other side. This is the most anti-democratic verse of saying, don't go according to the majority. If everyone does that, what would happen? So there's a real contradiction within this verse in chapter 23, verse 2 of Shmot, that on the one hand says, do not follow the majority to do evil. On the other, it says, go according to the majority. So which one should we do? That is the existential question we have to ask ourselves at each and every decision we make. Because if we always go according to the majority, we could become a terrible, evil society, silencing minority opinions. That if we always go according to what we hold to be true and never listening to what the majority has decided, we'll also be destroyed. And this brings us to the important story of the 9th of Adar, which on the 9th of the Hebrew month of Adar, around the year 66 to the Common Era, shortly before the destruction of the Second Temple, the sages of Hillel and Shammai their students temporarily neglected their own principles of the 49-49, of Elu ve'Elu, of these and those being the words of the living God, and became locked in a 50-0 game that brings to destructive conflict. Each trying to advocate for their capital T truth without any understanding or consideration for their opponent's truth. And this took place most likely in the context of how open and closed to people that are different from us, to people that were the Roman community, the non-Jewish community in the land of Israel at that time period. And that's the reason why we took that story, the 9th of Adar, as our story for our project, the 9 Adar Project, which promotes our week of constructive conflict taking place this week around tens of communities around Israel and in many communities all over the world, as a wake-up call to say, how can we bring back a 49-49 lens for how we argue? Today, our cultural competency and how we engage in constructive conflict and difficult conversations is really being challenged. And we need to be able, in my opinion, to turn to our tradition and to our parsha and to learn how we can strengthen our cognitive and emotional and spiritual, you know, skills and midot, and becoming more aware of our own bias of 49 that we might often think is a 50, and more respectful and curious about the opposing 49 that we too often see as a 0. And if we do this, we hopefully will be able to strengthen and foster healthier and more sacred disagreements that should be l'shem shemaim, for the sake of heaven. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Roth. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.